All-Star break is over. Hoynsie, back to work for you and the Guardians tomorrow. How was the All-Star break, buddy?
Yeah, it's been good, Jeff. Very, very, very good. I've been laying low.
Recharge a little
good
bit.
Good on you.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
That's the way to go.
Good job, Hoynsie.
Dan and I just spent the last hour taking a look at what happened in the first half with hitters, pitchers, front office, what we think could happen, you know, in the second half, who's a key guy to keep an eye on, and all kinds of different things. We had fun doing it. But I must be honest. I look at the standings and I think, okay, the number says you're not too far out of a playoff spot. The number of teams you have to jump to get that wild card playoff spot makes it feel like a real daunting task. How can this team make the playoffs?
Oh, boy, I don't know, Jeff. It is a daunting task. You know, the one thing they have to do is they have to score more runs. They have to, you know, put a better offense on the field. And, you know, I don't see that changing overnight. I mean, right now this lineup is what it is. I don't see, you know, an emerging player. You know, that's the players that are going to really kind of turn it around in the second half. So, you know, that concerns me.
Hoynsie, I don't blame you, because the problem is outside of Juan Ramirez and maybe Carlos Santana, I mean, who's the arrow pointing up on that we might be missing when it comes to the offense?
Yeah, you know, I like what Angel Martinez has done, you know, that last trip. You know, he did a little bit of everything. He hit some home runs. He made some great plays in the field, drove in some runs. So I guess that's a guy that you could point to. Maybe Manzardo, he's if he can kind of find the kind of hitter he was in April and May, he looked like he had found kind of some power against the White Sox last weekend. So those are two guys, I guess, that could conceivably help this offense.
Hoynsie, before we get back into the team this year, what was going through your mind when you watched the Guardians draft college power hitter, big dude, after college power hitter, big dude, one after the other, it seemed, in the draft this week?
I was shocked. I thought, where are all the middle infielders?
and even the one they took, Hoynsie, they took one, he's like 6'3", 220.
Yeah, I thought, geez, where has this been? You know, so, yeah, I don't know if it was a change in philosophy or, you know, the draft being reduced from, you know, 3 days to two, but something definitely changed there. I'm really anxious to see, you know, how these draft picks, you know, how quickly they arrive in Cleveland, because if you take all college kids, you know, what, 2 to 3 years, you might be seeing some of them.
And, Hoynsie, a couple of guys out of last year's draft are already up. And I thought the same thing. It's like, ooh, I don't think it's a quick fix, but it's not a developmental 5-year or 6-year type of deal with these guys. They're either going to be here next year or the year after, or maybe they're not going to pan out. But whatever it was, I love the idea that, clearly, you brought in some guys who have a history of hitting the ball hard, and let's see if they might be able to. And even if you hit on, like, out of the top 6-7 hitters you took, if you hit on 3 of them, congratulations, that works.
Yeah, you know, and the team coming in this weekend, Oakland, Kurtz is in that lineup.
Yep,
and he was drafted last year, so, and he's hit a bunch of home runs, so. You know, I mean, if you put Bazzana in that mix, who's coming back now, you know, he's finally, you know, over the oblique injury. That makes things interesting for this offense.
Paul Hoynes joining us, Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Hoynsie, where are we on Luis Ortiz? Has there been any developments? Has there been any notions from Major League Baseball, or are we still kind of hanging out in limbo?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much in limbo. I haven't heard anything. You know, everything is kind of, you know, hush hush right now. You know, they said, you know, the investigation could go, you know, would end tomorrow, when the second half officially starts. But I also heard it could extend if they were looking at other things, and if the MLB needed more time to investigate this.
Lindsay, it's a strange thing, and the most stunning development would be if MLB said, you know what? We investigated, all good. He's back and he's good to go.
Yeah, I don't think they did this haphazardly.
I don't either.
Jeff, I mean, this is something that, since they jumped in bed with gambling in 2018, or when, the Supreme Court, lifted the ban on gambling, this is, you feared something like this would happen, and, but they have to protect this. I mean, they are up to their neck in this, MLB, and if there's a violation, they really have to look hard at this thing. And Luis Ortiz, if he was doing what they said he was, which was basically, influencing prop bets by the way he pitched, there's going to be a price to pay on this.
A big one too, Hoynesy, wouldn't you think?
I think he's got two alternatives. You're probably looking at a year, best outcome, and perhaps a lifetime ban at the worst end of the spectrum.
All right, Hoynesy, scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the no way and 10 being yes. Emmanuel Clase A gets traded before July 31st.
I'd say, boy, from what I've heard lately, and this is, from outside the organization, and from a couple of contenders, they have said that when they've talked about Class A, the Guardians have said no. They do not want to trade him. And the same goes for Cade Smith. That was a week ago. That was, the deadline hasn't kind of created pressure yet. So we'll see what happens. But I think Class A obviously is the number one on a lot of teams' list. And it would not stun me if he got traded. But right now I'm leaning toward he doesn't get moved.
Lindsay, I don't think you can ever bank on draft choices in Major League Baseball. But the fact that they loaded up on the type of guys that you would want back in a trade for Class A, does that come into this at all?
I never thought about that, Jeff. That's interesting that you should say that. I don't know either. I don't know if you can draft that far ahead. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you can, let this year's team influence the draft you make when you're talking about players at the closest they can help you, the big league team, is probably 2 years.
That's what I thought too, Paul. But if I were to move Emmanuel Clase, it would be for the type of guys that you project a good chunk of these draft choices to be. Big dudes who hit the ball hard and are really productive. So I just bounce that one around my head, and I'm with you. I'm like, you couldn't do that in base. So I didn't think so, and I don't think so. But I still wonder about it a little bit. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
That's an interesting thought, definitely.
See, it's funny you guys say that, because I'm totally the other direction. It's like, okay, if you're going to give me somebody who has had production in the minor leagues, who at least has faced a better reign of competition than you would see in college, I'm willing to do that because it's the MLB draft.
And they're all crapshoots.
Exactly.
Except they loaded up on so many of these guys. It just was a thought that got stuck in my head there. Hoynesy, the closer you get to the trade deadline, I would think the less leverage the Guardians have involving Shane Bieber, if you need any leverage at all, for a guy whose contract could come to an end at the end of this year, and he hasn't been on the field yet and everything else. I'm so curious to see what happens with Shane. Not only can he pitch, will he pitch, how will he pitch, and then how does that affect what happens with him contractually with this team?
That's a good question, Jeff. I do not know the answer. I mean, I know they were really, really happy with the way he pitched Tuesday in Arizona. I would think the next step is going to be a rehab somewhere, maybe Double A, Akron, you know, over the weekend or, you know, sometime early next week. You know, what, probably by the end of August, late August, mid-August, he's back. If everything goes well for him, Bieber is back in the rotation, I would imagine. And then what's he get? Maybe 4 or 5 starts? And so, you know, I think, you know, if he's healthy and if he's sound, you know, I would imagine Bieber would walk away from that mutual club option next year and become a free agent.
Hoynes, I'm going deep cut on you. Do we know anything on John Means' process of possibly coming back at some point this season?
I think he's farther behind. You know, obviously he was farther behind Bieber, and I don't know. I think that's really, really up in the air that he makes it back. If it was, it would probably be in September, you know, late mid-September, I would think. But I haven't heard much about Means.
How about Juan Brito, who probably would have been starting at second base all year, Hoynesy, had he not been injured late in spring training, yanked his hamstring the other day. Do you think we will see him before maybe we see Kafis and DeLauder?
Oh, boy. I think the chances are better that you'd see Kafis and DeLauder than Juan Brito. But, you know, you've got, Arias, I would think he's coming back. You know, as soon as the break ends or right after the break, he seemed to be making a lot of progress. And that, you know, kind of takes your middle infielder that the Brito would have to play. That takes that spot in the roster.
But what do you do then? If you bring Arias back, are you going to sit Rocchio? Are you going to not play Schneeman as much? Does Angel Martinez not see any time in the infield? I wonder. It seems like they have decisions to make, Paul, on a lot of these fringe guys on the roster right now.
Yeah, definitely. They like Arias so much, but yeah, because Rocchio hasn't played bad since he's come back. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think he's made a case that maybe he should stay at shortstop. I don't know. I mean, and maybe, that's a guy that gets, you know, you trade one of those guys, you know, those extra infielders.
Why do you think we haven't seen DeLauder or Kafis at this point?
Well, you know, DeLauder, from what I'd heard over the, you know, when they were in, you know, just before the break, when they were in Chicago, you know, he had developed some wrist problems, so they didn't play him on Saturday and Sunday at Columbus. But, you know, he went home during the All-Star break. He's scheduled to come back, rejoin Columbus. And I guess they're going to go from there. It seems like, you know, I don't know if I thought it was like an IL situation, but it doesn't seem like that right now. But, I'm not 100% sure, but we'll have to see. So I would think one of those guys is up here. The one thing they don't want to do is bring a DeLauder up and then have to turn around in 2 weeks or 10 days and put him on the IL. They want to make sure this guy is healthy. And, you know, I'm not sure how you do that with a baseball player. You know, you play him every day and you just, you know, you're going to have some aches and pains. I think they just want to see him, you know, kind of, is he ready and can he handle the workload of AAA and then take the next step in Cleveland. But I think, you know, before the season ends, I would imagine we see him if he's healthy in their minds.
Paul Hoynes joining us from the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. Hoynesy, I wonder when you look at this team, if you're Stephen Vogt, you've been platooning at a lot of different spots and making sure you play your roster and everything else. And that's great for all the guys. It keeps them fresh. But it also, to me, screams you don't have a guy who you think you should start. Otherwise, he'd be getting every day at-bats. Should Steven roll back the platooning a little bit and give these guys more at-bats, or is he trying to milk the most he can out of what he's been given to work with?
I think it's the latter there, Jeff. I mean, are you going to give Jonathan Rodriguez every day at-bats in right field from what he's shown you?
No, sir.
So far?
No, I'm not.
And John Kenzie Noel, are you going to do the same with him? I mean,
Paul, how is each one of those guys hitting 140?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Yeah. I'd be more inclined to give it to Noel because we saw it last year. But you know, when he's had a chance, he hasn't played. I mean, he hasn't produced. And you know, and Lane Thomas, I think, has been a big, you know, really that was a key guy for them coming into this season. They thought, you know, a full season of him, and unfortunately, he's been on the IL three times.
It's the whole anybody but Stephen Kwan in that outfield has just been a burning tire fire, Hoynsey. I can't figure it out for the life of me.
I mean, no, you're right. I mean, it. You know, Nolan Jones is fine. If you look at Nolan Jones' numbers, he's finally starting to come around a little bit. He's hitting over 300 since the end of. I'm trying to think what month we're in, July, since the end of, I think the end of May or June, since the end of June, you know, coming into July, his numbers are pretty good, but we haven't seen any power from him. That's, you know, we haven't seen some production from him, but at least he's starting to swing the bat. So, I mean, if one guy you'd like to see him play every day, it's probably Jones. I you know, give him a chance against lefties and righties, and let's see what happens.
All right, Hoynsey, I hope you enjoyed your break. I hope the Guardians enjoyed their break. They didn't play very well in the second half last year in comparison to the first half. Can they flip it this year?
Well, the schedule certainly is in their favor, Jeff. You know, they have, I think it's the, they play the one of the easiest schedules in the second half, quote unquote, in baseball, after really having a kind of a tough go against, you know, schedule wise in the first half. So they've got that working for them at least.
Always a pleasure, Paul. We love having you join us. So thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Paul Hoynes joining us on the Fan Hotline. And of course, his coverage of the Guardians, absolutely outstanding, in the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. I'm Jeff Phelps. Andy's out today. Dan Menigan in his place. Dan doing all kinds of work today. Jay Morrison, Bengals beat reporter for SI.com, SportsIllustrated.com. Coming up at 1 o'clock as we conclude our chat with beat reporters from other teams out of the AFC North. Jay's going to join us in about 33 minutes. Paul Hoynes was just with us from Cleveland.com. And looking ahead to the second half of the season, Hoynesy. And I don't pay that much attention usually to who's on the schedule. I usually pay more attention to our team. But Hoynesy brings up a fact that can't do anything but help the Guardians' chances, Dan, in the second half.
Yep.
And it's that their schedule is a little light. They're playing some of the lesser teams that they'd have to play during the year. And in theory, having won 6 of their last 7 games, this is an opportunity to keep things going in the right direction and maybe jump right back into this wild card and maybe more than that, leapfrog a bunch of these teams in front of them.
It's part of the reason why I'm looking at the deadline to possibly even buy. Because
that scares me.
I wonder if you could bring in a multi-year reinforcement and almost help the cause not only for this year, but then moving forward. Because we've seen enough times, and again, I'm going glass half full. But if you've looked ever since they've expanded that wild card, a lot of those wild card teams are the teams that you are finding in the World Series and even winning the World Series. They're the teams that are catching fire in there and making a run. The Mets last year are a great example. Like, there are a lot of teams, the Diamondbacks, the Texas Rangers. We can point to a bunch of these with this expanded wild card and say, okay, this is what can happen if you just get into the dance and catch fire at the right point. But you need to be able to go in and you need to be able to make moves to help your team right now to be able to do that. You can't just roll out whatever you want to call center and right field and mix that with your shortstop predicament, and mix that with your catching predicament, and mix that with your second base predicament when it comes to offensive output, and go, we're great, let's roll. No, you've got to fix that if you want to be a playoff team. You can get away with one automatic out and make noise in the playoffs, But when that starts turning into two and three and whatever the nuclear hazard that is right field, like, you got to get that fixed if you want to have anything to do this season.
Our friend, Hoynsey's colleague, Terry Pluto at the plaindealercleveland.com has a very interesting story out now. Can the Guardian season be saved? And Terry does some question and answer stuff that's really good. And he brings up a point that I think we all need to keep in mind here. At this time last year, at the All-Star break last year, the Indians were 12 games better than they are right now. I mean, last year, they were 58-37 last year at the All-Star break. 58-37. They had that great start. They were 21 games over 500. Right now, they're three games under 500. Huge difference in the first halves of the season. Second half of last season, they were basically a 500 team. They were 34-32. So you had the great start, and then your team went flat. And Dan, we touched on that earlier. Your team went flat in the second half. They're a 500 team. And you still went into the postseason and were able to get there because of the great start. If you can swing that in the other direction, it sounds daunting. But as Terry points out, that's exactly what the Tigers did last year. They had a great second half of the season, and that propelled them into the playoffs. And then it propelled them into what's been a phenomenal season for them so far right now. Can our team do that? I'm so hard-pressed to say yes, because I just don't like the offense. I don't know that this team can score enough runs to pull off a great second-half run. That's the problem I have with it.
So your path to doing that, all right, so let's use the Tigers as a model, okay? So the way the Tigers did that is they turned around and they actually traded Jack Flaherty, because they thought that they were out of it. Starting pitcher who's now back with them.
Yep.
They went bullpen madness. They completely rode their bullpen in every single matter of it. So it was Scooble throwing.
It was Scooble and then bullpen games, right?
Right. It was Scooble.
Basically.
And then they had a couple starters in between there, like Casey Mize was getting out there and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't ideal. But what they also did was they realized that Javi Baez was a black hole. And they benched him. He actually got hurt. And then they just turned around and benched him. Spencer Torkelson started to hit. That was the other thing,
they needed him to hit.
Kerry Carpenter came up. He hit decently enough. Riley Green is one of the better players in baseball that no one is talking about. They ended up getting production from a lot of other areas, which is how they were able to turn this thing around and were able to rattle off as many games as they did. Could this team do that? Yeah. But you're good. Step one of that is realizing the mistakes that are there and correcting those. Like, step one for this Guardians team, and I'm sorry to repeat myself, is you need to look at center field, and you need to look at right field, and you need to go, that's unacceptable. I'm sorry, you can't have a negative win platoon. I can't have a platoon that's costing me wins. That's the opposite of platooning.
Makes you wonder what they're doing in right field.
Right. I
mean, that just makes no sense at all.
You can't have that and be a serious contender. You can't have that and be a playoff team.
Problem there is, there are numerous problems there. You expected Nolan Jones to come in and hit more than he did, than he has, even though his average has gone up every month. Who thought John Kenzie Noel was going to hit 140? Who thought that last year's AAA Player of the Year, Jonathan Rodriguez, if given a chance, would come up and hit 140? But they're both hitting 140 for the first half of the season. And then most importantly, Dan, you assumed that Lane Thomas was going to be a starter in one of those two spots, either center or right field, and just take care of it, and it would be done, and he would hit, and he would perform, and he would produce.
Right.
And he's been injured. And
bad.
I like Lane Thomas. I like some of the things he did last year. He wasn't great when he came over, but he answered the question, who is starting in fill in the blank? And that was supposed to be the case this year. If they can get him healthy, I think if he's able to get out there, Dan, before the trade deadline and show anything, you either got to think about signing him or trading him. I think the last thing you want to do is just leave him playing the rest of the year if he's able to play, and then let him walk at the end of the year. He's one of those assets that can some team give you something for him? I don't know. But remember, they traded who? Alex Clemmie? Who is a really highly thought of pitcher in the organization and Jose Tena, an infielder who's done okay for Washington.
I mean, that's just sunk cost. I'm not going to sit there and look at the, you know, what we gave up to get this guy.
No, I'm not.
I don't know if you could salvage.
I'm not saying that, but I'm just wondering. The last thing I want to see with Lane Thomas is to have him leave at the end of the year. I'm either hoping that he plays or that I can trade him to somebody. Now, if he doesn't play, you probably can't trade him to somebody. At the end of the year, if he hasn't played and he's not any good, you don't want to sign him.
Right.
So I get all that, but it's just, it's like, wow, that maybe more than anything is the biggest thing that's gone wrong with the whole platoon and why you're not hitting in the outfield and everything else. Lane was supposed to be healthy and productive, and he's not been either.
Agreed. He's been hurt, and when he's been healthy, he's been bad, and then he's been hurt. This is the reason
why. No recipe for success.
I could see a path for them to be a playoff team, Jeff. The problem is that they're going to have with that path is it's going to have to veer from a path that they take.
Yeah, it's gonna have to be Lane Thomas is healthy and productive. Nolan Jones is more productive. And I would say give Kyle Manzardo every day at bats at DH and do something with Carlos Santana. Either play him or trade him.
Or you're looking around the league at veterans who need a change of scenery.
Yeah.
And you're buying in and going, okay, maybe we can get this guy to turn it around just by getting him out of that particular place.
It all starts tomorrow for the Guardians as the Athletics, didn't call them Oakland, will be in town to start a series and start the second half. The Open Championship underway in Northern Ireland right now. Scottie Scheffler made some comments there as the tournament was kicking off. And when you hear what Scottie had to say, and we'll tell you what he had to say coming up next, you'll never confuse him with Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or Tiger Woods. You'll hear why coming up on Baskin and Phelps.
So much can happen around the globe that we never hear of.
I really share in our fans' disappointment, frustration. Honestly, I'm embarrassed.
They've been through some tough battles, right? They know what the playoffs looks like. This team's been battle-tested in the playoffs.
He's a piece of crap. The kid, he sucked. He's sucked his whole career.
I got rumors about him. He couldn't please his wife, so now he's divorced.
Put a damn winning team on the field.
Now, the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Well, we'll start off in the NBA Summer League last night, where the Cleveland Cavaliers unfortunately fell to the Sacramento Kings, but they had a show-out performance from one second-round pick, Tyrese Proctor, who had 35 points, 15 of them in the fourth quarter, along with four assists, both team highs, as Proctor was caught up with NBA Australia, talking about how he's getting ready for the NBA.
I feel like, you know, just through trials and tribulations, had a lot of ups and downs, and I think it just made me mentally tough, and it's helped me tremendously.
I mean, that's quite a standout performance, and that could be a potential boost for a Cavs team that may need some toughness, as you've been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, he's 6'5". The reason he got drafted where he got drafted as a combo guard is because he lacked a lot of the athleticism traits, wasn't really explosive off the dribble, and had trouble getting into the paint. But yesterday, watching those highlights, man, that mid-range game is potent. It was potent at Duke, and it was very nice yesterday, and just very crafty. So he would get a guy on his hip and still be able to kind of seal that defender off and finish at the same time. So I liked what I saw. Granted, you know, NBA games are going to be a completely different level, but it was nice to see a little bit of an outburst yesterday.
Summer League isn't what it used to be, but this is really, really promising here and really exciting because he's going to be needed to contribute in some fashion this coming year with the losses that they've had. He's going to be expected to come in and provide some quality to this organization on the floor in NBA games. So this is a really nice start for this young man.
We've already got the headline from Athlon Sports here. Cavs' Tyrese Proctor looks like the steal of the draft after summer league expansion.
Tone, the steal of the draft. What say you, friend? Second time I've called you friend today, and you don't like that.
I didn't like the first time. That time I kind of liked it. We're a little bit later in the morning.
Interesting.
Getting closer to your vasectomy. You need all the friends you can have.
We're all excited for it.
Probably not steal the draft, but we'll see. We'll see. Look, the first game I saw him in the summer league, it was like a rude awakening. But yesterday was a very, very nice performance.
No, wait a minute. Last week he was shooting the bleep out of it to start the game, wasn't he?
Just his, just the way that...
not wrong.
I think people are a little surprised that he's not just getting by guys with ease. And it's like, well, he really didn't do that in
49th overall
college.
Pick.
Yeah.
If it were Cooper Flagg struggling to get by guys, I think you'd go, whoa, what the hell is going on here? It's 49th pick. Like, if he could get by guys with ease, he would have been picked a lot higher.
Well, if you were Cooper Flagg, you'd be sitting out the rest of this NBA
Summer
League.
Well, yeah, you don't want to get these guys hurt now, do you? I mean, this is a big investment from the Dallas Mavericks.
Speaking of the Summer League, Dave McMenamin of ESPN has been covering a lot of the Lakers stuff so far this offseason and was caught on video yesterday talking about the possibility of this being LeBron's final year in the league.
I think we have to start thinking about it. This could be his last year in the league. Rich Paul told me, yeah, there was no extension talk because we didn't ask for an extension. Now you could say, well, why didn't the Lakers offer it? But Rich Paul's point to me was this wasn't a point of tension. There's a very limited time remaining in his career. We already kind of knew that. We knew that basically since he reached 20 years in the league, he's gone into every offseason contemplating retirement.
I have not been on the LeBron back to Cleveland train like you guys have. I still think that if it's a one-year deal, that's much better of an investment than if
there
it were to
be
two or three.
Listen, Mitch, there's no way this is his last year in the league. If this was his last year in the league,
we'd already know.
You'd already know, and the ticket prices, every arena would be gearing up already, especially here in Cleveland. Are you kidding me? For his final game, there's zero, unless he sustained a disastrous injury. But even then, after the injury, the comeback in his final year would be the big story. There is zero chance this is his last year in the league. I'll bet anybody on this.
I mean, he has to have a real serious injury happen to him where this is his last season in the league. He has to, because he will come out and he will say it's his last season in the league, exactly what Lyman said, because he's going to be an owner. And this is a little bit of a greasing of the rail to the other owners of what he provides with his name to an NBA franchise, as he will probably be the figurehead of a group that eventually owns the Las Vegas, whatever they're going to be called when they eventually put a team in Las Vegas.
Well, and if he wins the championship, you'd say, oh, he'll go out on top like a John Elway. I don't think there's a chance in hell he would quit. He would say, we're going to try to win another one and go get six and go tie MJ at that point. Yep. So, no, I do not think this is his last year in the league.
Moving on from that, we go over to the ESPYs last night, the most star-studded of athletic events last night because there were no games. Host Shane Gillis had a couple pot shots at some certain Cleveland Browns quarterback, one we can talk about here, in one, Shedeur Sanders.
Shedeur Sanders had his jersey number retired at Colorado this year, and people are saying it's because of nepotism, because of his father, and it's not. It's because he went 13-12 over his career, and he almost won the Alamo Bowl. Definitely not nepotism, right? All right.
That's a little mean for a guy who's been...
The standard is pretty low at Colorado, though.
Funny thing is, the people that did not like us even talking about Shedeur Sanders, they would bring up that record, and they would bring up the fact that kind of shrunk against the better teams. Now, we defended him on this show because we looked at what the other teams had and what they had and the offensive line versus those defensive lines. I didn't think he had much of a shot.
They were 1-11, and then they went 4-8, and then they went to a bowl game. That is a nice, nice bump up. I don't know if it's a bump up to really put him in the ring of honor and put his name on the stadium, but his dad is the head football coach. They want to keep his dad as the head football coach. There's certain things that you do, but in the grand scheme of things, they have been a terrible program for the last 20 years, with the exception of like 1 year. They had the Mel Tucker year, which, you know, no more of him. They had the Mel Tucker year, and then what? Didn't they have like 1 year that was like 5-7 with Darren Cheverini or something like that? Like, that was it. They've been terrible. So, yeah, take the positive thing and go with it.
Sanders, by the way, was at the festival yesterday for the Garden Valley Fun Fest. This is him via Channel 5.
It's definitely just get active and actually do it. Sending money and stuff, that's easy, but you have to actually go out there and be in the flesh. You know, I feel like that's more impactful.
He's building himself up publicly, at least. Now, if not on the field yet, he's building himself up with these like public appearances in the area.
Well, it's a nice thing for him to go up there and do. I mean, you're talking about people who have been displaced because of their homes burning. I think that was a really nice thing for him to do, and I saw the event. I saw your contemporary, Leah Doherty. She was there live yesterday, and I saw the video of that. I thought it was really, really good.
He's been doing a lot. He's been out and about, not just the workouts, which somehow people are ripping him for filming the workouts as if every athlete isn't doing that these days. I mean, good. The guys that have been around the league for years, they're showing their workouts.
Was he not working out? That would be the only issue I would have. Yeah, you're not working out.
But if you didn't see anything, then those people, what? You think those people would then go, oh, I love the fact that he is keeping his head down and getting to work, and we don't even have to hear about it. Like, you would just rip him and think, oh, is he even working out?
I hate to tell everybody, like, he's not the last. He's the first. The next guy, if you draft a quarterback, guess what? He will have a team of people following him around with cameras next year.
The year after that,
they're their own brands. Quarterbacks have more of their own fan bases now than they've ever had because they're going to three different programs now. So he's just the beginning of it, so you better get used to it.
That's it for about last night.
Coming up at 8:22, wow. Mary Kay Cabot going to join us on the show. What?
Nothing on Ohio State winning the 2024-25 Capital One Cup as the most prestigious, most accomplished Division One sports program. Literally, Mitch just going to not talk about that? Interesting.
It's a radio show. Are you going to say something?
I mean, there was some news yesterday regarding Ohio State that... they might not have been so happy about regarding one of their pregame shows.
You are Ross Buckingham right now, man. It is something else. Is it not, Tone? I mean, good God almighty.
Their trade for not just Stephen Kwan, but Emmanuel Clase, which involves two current pitchers in L.A., one starter, one reliever, and their top offensive prospect who's in high A ball, and then maybe another prospect. That was the initial one they talked about before Dalton Rushen got thrown in.
The guy at the end, I don't know any of these people's names, the guy at the end who brings up Rushen and then brings up a couple other guys, like, I think he's more on the right track with it, where it's like, what was being brought up is a good starting place. Like, if you're trying to consummate a deal with the Guardians for these two all-star players.
I think he was just being nice to his friend. I think he was trying nicely to say, like, you know, we always do the compliment sandwich of, like, you're a great guy, and I think you were such a talented person. You have B.O. But you know what? The best that you're a great father, that's what I feel like he was doing to their trade offer. But yeah. I guess, sorry.
No, my main point was just to sort of echo Todd. Like, yeah, the idea that Rushen has to be part of it for me to have any sort of interest. And that's where my stance kind of came from, was what that guy brought up, where it's like, I think Rushen has to be part of the deal. Okay, like, now we're really talking, because that guy is consensusly, like, he was up until he got to the majors this year, the Dodgers' top prospect. And now he's in the majors, so he's not considered a prospect anymore. But, like, he's the guy that I would covet. I understand getting their other top prospect right now. I think you have to throw in a couple others as well.
Is a catcher, no matter how, and LA's done a good job of developing good offensive catchers. And when the best player in the deal for a elite left fielder who is an elite leadoff hitter, even though I wouldn't re-sign him here, and an elite closer.
This is where this starts to fall apart for me, though, is when you're like, I want to re-sign him here, but we're going to trade him, give me all your best
years
players.
Three years of postseason control of an elite leadoff hitter and 3 years, 4 years of postseason control of an elite closer who's not just elite but incredibly affordable? Yeah. This isn't Mookie Betts on 1 year. Sorry, that was mean. And I know what I was doing
there.
No,
you can say it, because that deal still angers me too.
It's not Francisco Lindor with 1 year of control getting Andrés Giménez, Amed Rosario, and two dudes who've never sniffed the bigs. No. Listen, here's a few things to factor in. It is an absolute buyer's market right now. And that is, there's going to be maybe three teams with decent pieces out there, which is why teams like even the Twins might consider dealing their closer, because you just might be able to get an otherworldly offer. So that's where you start with one of these two players. Like, I don't think you can extend Stephen Kwan with the deal you have with Hosey. Plus, and not just beyond that, guys. Like, you need to throw the rest of the roster isn't good enough. So three good pieces might be worth as much to you as one elite piece like Stephen Kwan is. But if I'm doing anything for either guy and it's not 150 cents in the dollar, well, fine. I'll keep them till next year. And I think that's where I'm coming from. Like, I think you should be able to get Herculean offers for either guy. So I got to consider either offer. Or if you want to do the all-in-one for Kwan and Clase, hell yeah. LA should be in on this, by the way.
Like this, LA has the players you would want in a trade.
I need the center fielder, Andy. How do we say? I always
butcher. Páez.
Páez. So Páez. I need rushing. I need Freeland, who's a third baseman, second baseman at AAA. I need DePaula. Like I need it all. And I think here's the thing. I think the Dodgers understand that, and they're in the position to do it because their farm system has bounced back, and the rest of their roster is pretty stacked.
I feel like the Dodgers, like their farm system is always still good, even when they've made all these trades. And I think part of that is because they have sort of fleece teams, which is the premise of, I think both of us are trying to make here is like the Guardians are never going to get fleeced anyway. Like they don't get fleeced in these types of deals that they want to make them.
They do lose trades. They do lose them.
Yeah, but I mean,
like the Lindor trade right now seems more like a loss, even though the first 3 years of it, you got a ridiculous amount of WAR. But Jimenez falling completely apart, kind of you end up losing by default.
I'm not saying they don't lose trades. I'm just saying when they make these trades, especially at this time of year, the deadline, they always get back a whole understanding like our future depends on these moves. So we're going to get it back as much as we can. So I liked the premise and the parameters of this deal from a starting place. Rushing to me is a guy that I would covet if I was the Guardians in any trade. I you're right. There's other names that you could throw in there. I think the Guardians would obviously go big for those guys if they could or if they can. If they really are motivated to get a deal done. I think ultimately they don't. I think ultimately Stephen Kwan is still here on August 1st. But yes, like I think what these guys were talking about, like the entirety of the conversation, it was on the right track towards what I think the starting place would be for a conversation.
I'm going to give you two middle relievers. I'm going to give you a garbage man named Dale who works in Section 315 at Chavez Ravine. And we're going to give you two low minor leaguers who we signed for a combined $17. Tell us no. That's what ESPN LA did. This is where I disagree with you. Mostly because you also started with the pitching of like
two starters, but not like starting.
Yeah, like I actually disagree with Todd. I think the starter you would have gotten in, I think he's a mid starter. I think he's another Logan Allen back end of the rotation kind of guy.
I think the Guardians, I feel that the Guardians, and I talked about this earlier, we know their process on evaluating and developing hitters is bad, but their process on developing pitching has been great. I think they feel like they can trade for a lot of guys out there that are pitchers that are like 3-4 ERA guys and that they can get more out of them and find a way to make them better.
Yep, like, exactly. But so, you can do that for Josh Naylor, who's got 1 year of control like they did for Ciccone, not Stephen freaking Kwan in Emmanuel Clase.
But those aren't the only parts of this deal is what I'm saying. Like if rushing's part of it, that's, again, you need a catcher.
You're working for ESPN LA. I know it. You're on the dime. All right?
I'm not saying they can't ask for more. That's all I'm saying. They should obviously have more.
I beat you down. I went too hard with the ESPN LA.
You didn't beat me down. I have no response to the ESPN LA thing. I'm sitting here in front of you working at 92
to the
fan.
You can't deny it. You can't deny it. Sounds pretty guilty if you can't deny it.
It's like the Epstein files. They were just false reports.
Oof. No. Mac, what do you got, buddy?
I was going to say, too, like the other part that you got to look at as well is the fact that for the Dodgers lineup, there's only one hitter in their entire lineup that doesn't have double-digit home runs, and it's Michael Conforto in left field, and he's batting 185 this year. Like, he is far and away the biggest hole in that lineup.
You know what's funny about this is I think Conforto probably would come back to Cleveland in all this, and the funniest part about that is
they would sell them. They would talk themselves into, like, rehabilitating Conforto.
Well, no, they would, but so he would come back, and it's because I think they've lusted after Conforto for a while, and he's just not... He's just not good anymore.
No.
Even last year in San Francisco, he was playable. Like, he was probably about league average. But, like,
the wheels fell off of that wagon quick, by the way.
But yeah, it's that injury, man. You miss a time. Yeah. Missing a year in baseball is so much harder than in the NBA or the NFL, where it's just so much of it is that rhythm and timing if you're a hitter. Pitching, I think, is different because you already have the advantages. Baseball right now is very much a pitcher sport. It is so hard to hit right now with what guys are throwing and the movement that it goes with that you miss a year. And, oh, by the way, not just a year, but I think the next year he still only played like 125 games. Yeah, that's And I hate it. I'd loved him any of the three times the Mets tried to trade him.
I was going
to
say, those first like 3 years with the Mets, he was like on his glow up. And it was like, oh, this guy's the next great outfielder. And then it all went downhill from there. He was an all-star in 2017.
In fairness, I think he's owed like $8 million the rest of the way. I'd still take him as a, but like, you're not going to keep him long term.
Oh, no, like the Guardians only take those guys. It's like when they got Yasiel Puig.
And the Dodgers would pay most of the money.
It's like when they got Yasiel Puig. It's like they take those guys if they're like kind of in the spot they are now, which is, hey, we're a fringe playoff team. We could use somebody with some upside that maybe turns into something, but we don't really think he's going to turn into anything. So we'll just experiment with it. He would honestly be a perfect guy to bring back in a deal like this. Is kind of a throw-in, but yeah.
Now, to the idea of the two, the sending Kwan and Clase at the same time, the only thing I will say is the Dodgers are really the only team that I think can do that.
That's why I think that they are the perfect, like they're the perfect team to trade
like
with.
People have mentioned the Yankees, and I'm like, yeah, their farm system's okay. They've got like Spencer Jones, but like beyond that, yeah, there's some pitchers that are interesting. It's not a great, like, actually, no, the Tigers could. The Tigers should trade for both because they have, between Clark McGonigal, Rainier, the shortstop, Briseño at AAA or AA, they have, but they would have to give you, like, they've spent years building that farm system, and they would have to give you all of it. Like you would have to give me, well, of your top 10 prospects for Class A and Kwan, because there's a in division tax, you're giving me half of your top 10 prospects and then probably another piece or two on top of that.
Well, here's the other thing that I think Todd is right about, because we talked about this earlier. I think he took your argument a step further, because you were like, I want all your top prospects and I want all your top hitting prospects. You don't want pitchers anymore. He took it a step further. He kind of combined both of our takes, because I was very much the guy saying all this team does ever is trade for prospects. And I'm always the big, I don't know how I feel. Like, prospects are just this, like, it's like Bitcoin, is I think the example I used earlier in the show. Like, it's this magical, mythical thing that you hope turns into something, but you don't really know. It's an investment that you don't know that it's actually going to work out. So I'm with him. We're like, I'm sick of seeing this team just get prospects and bank on like, we'll get there eventually. If you're making the trade with these two guys involved, which is part of the reason why like rushing makes a lot of sense, because rushing is now an MLB ready player that was a top prospect not so long ago, like a year ago. Like, those are the types of guys that you want. I'm with him on that. If you're going to make a trade with the Dodgers or anybody, I get the infatuation with prospects, man, but you got to give me guys who are MLB ready, because that's what this team needs right now, frankly.
I will say, I think it's going to be a disappointing deadline.
I think the last couple years have been that way.
Last year, people crapped on last year. You got Lane Thomas, Matthew Boyd, and Alex Cobb.
I know, I'm just saying in general, like, I don't think it was
fair.
There was a lot of talk leading up to it, like, this guy could be available, that guy could be available, and like the biggest deal was like Jack Flaherty.
Yeah.
That was it.
Did okay there.
No, he did. I mean, they won the World Series. I'm just saying, like,
specific to what you're saying, I think this is the year where this is a textbook year where if the Guardians weren't feeling the pressure of their absolute failure on the offensive side of the ball, if they weren't feeling that, and they are, look at how they drafted, look at some of the messaging that's come out. They're not panicking, but they are in full court press mode of like, no, we've got this figured out, all is well. It's as motivated as I've seen them to try and get this right? I think the overreaction's going to be, we don't want to inflame the situation and further upset fans, so we're not going to trade Clase, we're not going to trade Kwan, and because we're 4.5 games out of the playoff spot, we're probably not going to trade Santana either. And I think my thing would be, I understand that it's very likely you have a positive regression next year.
Yeah.
But man, like, unless you're going to spend money in offense, like even just a couple role-playing guys or, you know, like Austin Hayes kind of guys next year, if you're expecting this offense just to look completely different next year because regression, you might get yourself fired.
Real quick, are you going to be more upset if they are sellers, more upset if they're buyers? Nobody's going to be upset if they're buyers, I guess. But are you going to be more upset if they sell or more upset if they just do nothing?
I'd probably be more upset if they did nothing.
There's nothing wrong
with selling Class A or Cade Smith. They're fungible assets. And right now, both have incredible value. let's see what we can get for this. Let's see how we can restack this deck with the offense there.
I agree, because doing nothing makes it sound like you think you're like that. That almost gives off this aura that like, hey, we think we're so good and okay that we have a chance to actually like go deep in the playoffs. This team has to come to terms with the fact that like they have flaws. And so if you're selling, you're at least trying to add in some way to like address those things at some point. If you're buying, of course you're addressing those things. If you do nothing, it's just like this omission that like, yeah, we don't think anything's wrong. So I agree with you. I think that'd be the most upsetting thing that could happen.
In case we missed it, coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
As everybody's telling this show in particular, anytime I talk about it, Ken talks about it, how much Stephen Kwan could get, give me a number. Jason, I know you have canvassed the region. You've talked to the baseball writers. You've formulated your own thoughts. How much could Kwan get? He's not a power hitter, but certainly, can you imagine our lineup without Kwan? It's already one of the worst.
Jose would have zero RBIs because no one would, well, however many home runs he hit, no one would be on in front of
him. He's a 300 hitter with no power. Like, you say that, you go, okay, well, there was 100 of those guys 20 years ago. It's so strange, and yet if you look at like some of the advanced numbers, his WAR. I mean, he's a 3 WAR player this year. He was a 4 WAR player last year. Like his WAR numbers are off the charts. Now I think some of that is skewed by defense. Defense is so heavily weighted on WAR that I think it inflates it more than it should be. But it's hard to put a number on him, and I think it's part of the reason that they haven't been able to come to terms on an extension, because he's such an anomaly today, and it's hard to find a good comp for him. Andrew Benintendi back in the day when he was in Boston in his prime. And then, I think he got like 5 years, $75 million. That's a close comp only because of he was a high average speed guy with not a lot of power, but
yeah, that's $15 million
Kwan
a year.
Is superior to him. Seiya Suzuki, I think 5 for $85 million in with the Cubs a couple years ago. I don't think Kwan's $100 million player. But I think it's close. And it's not that they haven't tried. The Guardians offered Kwan, I think it was 2 winters ago. I might have been coming off his rookie year, that they tried to get something
done. They tried
done.
To lock him in early.
And he rejected their offers. Once you get to this point, I just don't see it happening. Like,
you don't see what happening?
An extension. Once a guy reaches arbitration and starts making a decent amount of money, there's no incentive for him really to sign at that point. If they were going to get something done with him, they were going to get it done a couple of years ago. So, I mean, I don't know. I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to see them get something done. But he's down to 2 years of control, and that's why you hear his name in trade rumors all the time now, because of the clock is ticking on him, and time's running out.
So yesterday we talked about it on the podcast, and I looked up numbers. You can't look at defense right now, so these are more middle infielders that are hitting kind of like he does.
Yeah.
And like Luis Arraez was one of those guys that came up. It's like 10 to 12 million is what those people are making.
He'll make more than that.
So I said that my max would be like 22, and that's like way over pricing. But is there any way they could get like a 5-year, $100 million deal or something like that?
I think he'll probably land in the 90 to 95 range, I think. I don't know if a team with this limit of a payroll. You talk out of both sides of your mouth, because I agree. Where would this lineup be without Stephen Kwan? But yet at the same time, can a team that spends this little really invest $20 million in a guy who can't hit the ball out of the ballpark? When history and data shows you the only way you win in the postseason is if you hit the ball out of the ballpark. Like, the guards ball thing is fun and it's cute. It doesn't win in the playoffs. We've seen that time and time. The game has become too specialized. There's too many bullpen guys that come out throwing 100. You can cut the game down to 3 innings from a starter, and then you just run one reliever out after another after another. It's too hard to string together 4, 5, 6 hits together in a playoff series to win games that way. You have to be able to hit the ball out of the ballpark. He's such an elite player defensively, but yet to put a guy in the corner outfield spot that doesn't have a lot of power, it's never made sense to me. He's always looked like a center fielder. I don't know if he's told them, I don't want to play center
field. Yeah, you do wonder.
But like, there's no reason for him not to be in center field. He is a center fielder. Yes, he's a Gold Glover in left field. You mean to tell me he couldn't play at that type of caliber in center field? Of course he could. It's foolish to say that he couldn't.
I know that I've taken a beating from Guardians fans. Ken called me Anthony Dolan. But if they can't afford $20 million
a year. Well, they got off the Jimenez money.
Yeah.
And Bybee signed. But the Jimenez money should be available.
Well, and they don't have to pay Naylor.
They were never going to pay Naylor. I just mean like future money. Like Jimenez was on the books for $22, $23 million a year by the end of that contract. And you also have, I mean, we're getting to the point, this is 2025. At some point here soon, this is going to be a David Blitzer problem, not a Paul Dolan problem. So that has to be taken into account.
And you'd hope he would do the new owner thing and make a splash right away. That's what every new owner does in every sport.
Yeah, but Stephen Kwan can't be the splash, though.
Right. No, that's true. That's true. So the hope would be that it would be Kwan and
yes.
Yeah. I'm pessimistic they'll get anything done because it's gone on this long. So if they were going to get it done, they would have gotten it done before now. I don't see it happening.
All right. Well, the Pittsburgh Steelers got it done with TJ Watt. What does that mean for the rivalry between Watt?
Shane Bieber back on the hill yesterday in Arizona when he pitched 2 innings, 5 strikeouts. And so, Jeff, when we talk about Bieber, is there hope for you that he could be back with the Guardians this year? Or do you think if he can show it in the next couple weeks here before the trade deadline that he could be in a good position to help the Guardians out if they wanted to make a trade?
Yes and yes.
What would you like to see?
I would like to see Shane Bieber pick up his option for next season. If he would do that, there's no way I'm trading him. I think the team has a chance to compete this year, Andy, for a playoff spot, and why not next year as well? So I would love for Shane Bieber to be a part of it, both this year and next. So I would press his agent and say, can you pick up that option? We want to keep him. And if they say, yeah, you know, we're not quite sure, we're going to see, and I would try to trade him. I don't want to see Shane Bieber walk out the door with no compensation coming back.
Is there a sense? Do you think if you're the Guardians, you try to play on a sense of it's business, so there's no loyalty.
There's no anything.
But the fact that like, hey, you know, we kind of stuck around with you this year, and you know, we've been here and we gave you $14 million for you know, this one, so that's all out the window.
Yep.
Yeah. If I'm Bieber, it's not that
And it should be if you're Bieber.
Yeah.
If you think,
I don't know. If I'm Shane Bieber,
you can get more money.
There might be a little sense of loyalty for them to stick with him this year after he got hurt, even though it felt like before, you know, all this went down that he was on a collision course to being traded a year ago. And now you sit here and you're like, if I'm his agent, I'm saying, no, we're not extending and we'll see what it's out. Unless I don't see another way around it. The business part of this is the part that
what would you
hurts.
Do?
If I was Shane?
No, if you're the Guardians.
Oh, I would ask him to extend and then try to work our way. Look, they know what they're doing with pitchers, and especially pitchers that are coming back from injury. And to be honest with you, if I was Shane Bieber, if there was a team that I would want to pitch for, knowing that I'm just coming back from injury, it's the Guardians, because they have proven time and time again that they have been able to take pitchers who have been injured and get them back to normal or get them back to beyond where they were before. That if there's one thing this organization does well, it is taking injured pitchers and getting them back on track. And you know, whether you had, you know, reconstructive elbow surgery or something else, the Guardians are really, really good at reviving careers.
All right,
I would do another 1-1.
But if you're Shane Bieber,
if I'm Shane, I probably would. Could you do it again for $14 million? You know, and even though next year you're looking at 10,
only he knows what that elbow feels like right now.
True,
he might. He and his agent are going to have to make a business decision, and it's this. Okay, one more year in Cleveland. If I pitch well, that sets me up for a humongous contract, which could really be a lot bigger than what he might find if he goes out on the open market this year and hasn't pitched or pitched well for the Guardians this year, because then it's a little shaky, you know? And that's why I think he has to know his own body. He has to know his health. and he has to know what he wants out of life financially. I mean, he's probably, if you've invested, I always throw that in thanks to you. Mm-hmm. If he's invested and paid attention to his money, he's already set for life. So do you think you can really set yourself up by staying for one more year, pitching well where you're comfortable, then go get the big contract, whether it be in Cleveland or somewhere else? Or you're going to roll the dice now and maybe sign for multi-years somewhere else at a lesser dollar figure than you could earn than by coming back next year and putting together a great year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I maybe I'm conservative in this way, but I always think of Justin Masterson's story. Remember Justin's story?
Yep.
I mean, he was sitting nice there on the verge of just
cashing in.
Gigantic. And then, boom, injury hits. And then you're just, it's never the same.
And you see that all the time. That's why, you know, for instance, Tanner Bibee signed multi-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
And is he performing as well this year? Not quite. But guess what? If he pays attention, he's set for life. And I don't know how you take that bit of reality out of these equations. Now, Shane's probably already made enough money that this can be about baseball and can be a calculated gamble. But I think it plays the same way for the Guardians. You know, Matt Boyd came back from Tommy John surgery, pitched in enough games that he cashed in with the Cubs, and he's really good. He was supposed to be an all-star, didn't go because he just pitched on Saturday, I believe. And, you know, Bieber could do the same thing. But if you're the Guardians, do you hang on to him and wait to see if he picks up the option? I would think that they can get a feel for his agent as to what they're thinking. I would think that's the case, because they were at least on good enough terms, Andy, to put together this deal to bring him back this year. And you're right, it was a nice gesture by the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives Shane a chance to rehab in a place where he's comfortable, where he knows everybody, and he knows they have, as you laid out, a track record of success.
I mean, he would have to scrape by. He's only made $41 million in his career. So, I mean, don't make fun.
They live in a world we don't know about.
I know. I'm just kidding. Dan, where are you going with this? If you're Bieber, what do you want to do? And then if you're his agent, what are you pushing him to do?
If I'm Bieber, I'm saying Matt Boyd cashed in by having 2 months of really good baseball.
Matt Boyd.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing. I'm looking at that and going, I'm not.
If he doesn't think he can get back on the mound?
If the Guardians are saying to me, hey, pick up that option and we'll talk, I'm going to look at them and say, I'll pick up that option in November. I'll pick up that option in October.
In which case, if you're a team. Now, see, here's the problem working against the Guardians.
It's his option, right?
It's his option.
Yeah,
okay. It's working against the Guardians. Trade deadline is in 15 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Bieber might not pitch in a major league game before the trade deadline. So what would you even get for him?
That's the question.
Exactly. Some team would have to come watch him pitch a rehab thing and say, hey, he's good to go. He's going to be with us in October and in August, September, and hopefully October. And that's the only place that the Guardians are going to find any value in a trade. If this were June 16th instead of July 16th, might be a different story. But right now, he's a guy who's pitched in an Arizona Complex League game after being shut down for a little while, and we don't know when he's going to be pitching against higher-level competition or when he's going to be in Cleveland.
Mm. Mike is in Stowe. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Hi, Mike.
I was kind of thinking of, like, about Shane Bieber, you know, and he's – I know, Andy, I know he's – guys like us, we scoff at $41 million. Like, you know, that'd be amazing, obviously. But you know, you got. I'm thinking it from his aspect.
Oh no! I'm not. He's got to make every penny. I'm not making fun of any player that can make every penny they possibly can. Not at all.
Sometimes it is an easy way to start thinking a little bit. But I'm thinking like him, you know. And if it's me, like it's like I like look. You got to do better now, and I want to avoid the Justin Masterson thing. You know, mm-hmm. I don't want to have that happen, and like, you know, it's tough. I would go to them. That's what I would do. If I'm a tribe, I'm going. Sorry, my bad. I'm going to him, and I'm saying, what do you really feel? Look, we've been good with you. Just tell us what you want. Are you not going to pick up that option? You know, if you don't really feel like you're going to pick up the option, you know, let us know now. We'd love to you know, try to get you to a good spot where you might want to be. We'll work with you on that. You know what I mean? Try to be, I would go in at that route. Because you are
to get some sort of discount if you're the Guardians trying to figure out some kind of. If I'm Bieber, I'm actually maybe looking at just redoing what I just did for one more year again, and he could be gone by the trade deadline next year.
Well, he could, but he probably wouldn't he have to get more? He's not going to do it for less. I know he's injured now, but he can get more out there for one. If he, you know, doesn't take ours and goes out there for a 1 year deal, he'll get more than $14 million from somebody else to try him. They're for sure, right? You know what I mean? To do that, don't you?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, ask yourself, if they tried to trade him right now, what would they get for him?
Actually, I think pretty decent, because you're not. I think, like they said,
I don't know either. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I feel like the Guardians are on the short end of this thing.
And also remember, another team is probably going to have to get him to either pick up that option or sign him to a longer-term deal. So he's got to be willing to do that too. Otherwise, all they're doing is renting a guy for 2 months, which cuts down on the value of anything that the Guardians would get back.
Well, that's what I mean. When I say talk to him, I think that's what it is. Because if we're going to work on a trade for you, it's going to be like a signing trade where you're going to get the deal you want. You're going to go here. And then, you know, that's what I'm talking about. Make it right. You know, don't that. And I think that's the best way for us to get the most value out of what we can from him. And the really, you know, I don't want to say set him up, because it's business. It's not always about, it's not about that. But, you know, at the same time, it's a good way to convince him to work with us. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, maybe gives us the best value, you know.
There's a human element to it, too. Mike, thank you. Mike and Stowe checking in. It's going to be interesting. But again, we're all saying this based on the fact that he was at Arizona. He was at the Arizona training facility, and he struck out 5 in 2 innings. But I mean, who is he going up against? That's my. I mean, is it, you know, guys they just drafted a couple weeks ago? I mean, who's he? You know, who's he striking out? And when you're coming on a rehab start like that, I think Jeff hit the nail on the head. You got to see if he can get to, you know, throw him back into Akron to get him moving here.
Yeah, but it's 15 days till the trade deadline. I mean, the time frame.
He's got to have one more rehab start.
The time frame works in Shane's favor here. It doesn't work in the Guardians' favor.
Hmm.
But that could be okay. You know, maybe he picks up his option because he thinks Cleveland a year, and then we see.
I'm in no rush to do anything if I'm Shane Bieber. That option's not going away.
Yeah. So, all right. So if you're the Guardians, what are you doing then?
If you're the Guardians, you're listening. If somebody wants to call up and make you an offer, you think it over.
Yes,
but I don't
know
how much of an offer you're going to get.
And you and I hate that idea. We all hate it. But you have to. But based on the fact that he hasn't pitched, I don't know what you're going to get in return. So it's a precarious little spot here for the Guardians.
Shane Bieber holds all the cards right now.
Yep, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, he does.
You set yourself up in the position for him to hold all the cards.
All right, let's think about it here for a second. We'll come back and put a bow on the show. And I also want to talk about some of the things we didn't get to in today's show. So why don't you stick around? 216-474-0092.
We welcome in Jake Murren here, who has been scouring the internet deep into research. I know Max, usually the senior research analyst. I'd say Jake is the senior research analyst. So you've lined up some trades that either fans have put in there or media members. Yes.
Yeah.
Where are we starting?
Yeah, let's start first with David Schoenfeld of ESPN. He has a trade here between the Cubs and the Guardians where Chicago lands Emmanuel Clase. The Guardians get AAA outfielder Kevin Alcantara, number 3 prospect. They also get Luke Little, an MLB reliever who is currently injured.
All right, so this is woefully inadequate for a reliever with 3.5 years of control, including 4 postseason. And that's not just control, but also incredibly affordable. I don't think you can make the deal with Chicago without I think it's Casey, the outfielder. Alcantara is a nice player. He's kind of a much better version, and certainly in the outfield, of like a John Kensie. Like, that guy's going to swing and miss a lot. The power's great, but this is woefully low. One top 50 prospect for this is kind of embarrassing.
honestly, out of the ones I've seen, like, I'm not taking it by any means, but it's probably one of the better ones. Like, at least you're getting a top three prospect back. Yes, for a closer with control, you're also getting an arm back. Again, like, not a healthy arm, but you're getting an arm back.
Not a back of the a bullpen. He's no. kind of like a middle reliever.
Which you could also use.
And you can find those anywhere if you're the Guardians.
Well, the problem is they find it in Matt Festa.
Okay. Too soon. I'm not ready.
In time. I think we need to be ready.
Hey, his ERA is only like 4-something. Okay? Thank you very much. Yeah. No, I don't think it's enough. I need two top 100 prospects and then something. And like that's when I'm okay taking a guy in high A or another Alphonsín Rosario. If that's the third and fourth prospect in the deal, we're talking. But honestly, I mean, David writes this as if the Guardians are desperate. I think the Guardians would just hang up the phone and never pick up your call again if this was your first offer.
Yeah, I think you got to come probably a little stronger. I don't know. Even if it's you throw those two and then another top 100 prospect and that guy is like one of the double A or high A guys, I think it might be at least a starting point. I'm not saying
both,
it's enough.
It would have to be both your outfielders as a starting point. Maybe not as a starting point, but inevitably that's, you know, two. I think that's two top 60. And I do think like is it Owen Casey or is it Owen? I'm going to screw his name up. However, or on Casey.
I think you're right. I think it's Casey.
He could slide into left field if then you trade Stephen Kwan in the offseason or somewhere like that. Oh, and by the way, I think he can also play a little bit of right field as well. All right, what's up? What's next up on Mockbusters?
Yeah, we have a value simulator user here, Bolo, who has a
big
trade.
Bolo guy.
Yeah, who has a trade ties. Here between the Giants and the Guardians. So the Guardians get a AAA player in Carson Wisenhunt, a number two prospect there, and then a AA right-handed pitcher, Will Bednar, and they give away Carlos Santana and Hunter Gaddis.
This is actually pretty interesting. Wisenhunt, I think, is the Giants' second best prospect. He is a top 60 prospect, and he's a lefty. He's not been great at AAA. The numbers are a little elevated, but I'm saying that without knowing like what the environment is. Bednar's kind of stinks. Like he's kind of I don't think he's a starter. I think he's a reliever. I don't want to give up Gaddis, but I kind of think this is about as good a value as you're going to get for Carlos making the money he's making and Gaddis, who I still don't know Gaddis is actually a true high-leverage setup guy. Like, I think he might be more of a seventh-inning guy as opposed to an eighth-inning guy.
I would take this deal in a heartbeat. I get a pitcher with a promising future where if you can turn him into a starter, or he is a starter, you can use him as so, and then I can trade off another piece to get anything else back. And I get out from Carlos Santana. And Hunter Gaddis is good. I like Hunter Gaddis. You're going to have to reinvent this bullpen as it is. So I'm fine moving off of one of those pieces. You still have Cade Smith. You still have Clase. And again, you're going to have to get more pieces. Like, it's not great to move off of Gaddis. Your bullpen might come crumbling. But future move, it's good.
All right, what's up next there, Jake?
Yeah, this next one comes from Mike Exisa of CBS Sports between the Red Sox and the Guardians. I really like this one. It's a one-for-one trade of Major League-ready players. The Red Sox get Emmanuel Clase in exchange for Jarren Duran.
I mean, this is about as good of a one-for-one value as you can get. Duran has not been the same hitter he was 3 years ago. So the power's taken a bit of a step back, but he's a very good center fielder. Is a very good hitter. There's a part of me that'd be like, okay, you still don't have enough power hitters, which I think if you're going to trade Class A, that should be the value. But yeah, I mean, you could go Kwan into Duran into Hosey, and that'd be a hell of a table setting. And I mean, they've got Roman Anthony, so they could do that. I know it's not going to be the guy. I almost would rather like Willier Abreu and then one of their top five prospects, because I have a sneaky big love for Willier, but I think he's hitting too much now. Where are you at with this?
There's enough control that I think it'd be okay with it. Again, like, Class A is not a piece that I'm like, I'm not dying to move off of him. I'm also not dying to hold on to him. So you're giving me an MLB-ready bat that I think Duran's still good. He's still young enough where it makes a lot of sense. And again, you have a club option for next year. You have 2 years of arbitration after that. You got three and some change of control. That's enough for me. You're basically swapping him for Class A. And I think if you can get a bat for a reliever at any point, you take that any day of the week.
Well, not just a bat, but a proven everyday right. potential top of the lineup bat. Yeah, I'd prefer a power bat. Yeah, like I know I throw this out and I've thrown this out for 2 years. I'd love Wyatt Langford for Class A.
well, yeah. Texas isn't that good, and they're sure as hell not moving off Langford. Durant would be a hell of a get for Class A. All right, what else here on Mockbusters there, Jake?
Yeah, next one, we have a trade proposal here between the Phillies and Guardians from Mark Morales Smith of SI.com. He has the Phillies getting Emmanuel Class A, and then the Guardians getting double-A shortstop Aiden Miller, their number two prospect, and double-A right-hander Eberson Castellano, their number 19 prospect.
What do you think, Jake?
I'd take it, honestly. Like, you give me two top 20 prospects in your organization, I'll take a... The arm doesn't mean much to me. I still need an answer at shortstop. I'm willing to move past Arias.
You were
so
low on Class A. You gave me two of your top 20 prospects. Like, it's not great. I'm not saying it's, like, a perfect. I'm
just not dying to hold on to Class A either.
I think... So, listen, I do think there's a little bit of value that if Class A doesn't have a strong second half of the season, or if he's kind of similar to what he's been this year, which is... had some good, great moments and had some pretty bad moments too. Yeah, I do think eventually his value is going to really start to tank. I Aiden Miller's a nice prospect, by the way, but he's not really going to be a middle of the lineup hitter. Who is it? Justin Crawford, who I think is Carl Crawford's son.
Mm-hmm.
That's another light pop center fielder. It's like both Kwan and Class A have been linked to the Phillies, and yet they've got a good system, but yet. It's more pitching and it's more light hitting guys who, and the power they do have are like boom or bust guys, kind of the way John Kensie was last year, but to a higher degree.
I want the power bats. I just have to sit here and wonder like how many different shots I have to take at power bats. Like John Kensie's there. Jonathan Rodriguez is supposed to be a power bat, although he's not at the major league
level.
Those
are not stopping you from getting a power bat.
How about Chase Lauder, Alphonsen Rosario, Jason Chorio, and Jace Lavoie?
And what have any of those guys done yet at the big league level?
Nothing, but that's my point. Is like,
well, but what I mean is,
power.
What if they? So here's the thing: if their biggest problem is you have four guys going to hit 30 home runs 2 years from now, you're going to take that. I'd rather go find contact hitting and on base machine guys because they've proven they can actually find those guys with some frequency. Yeah, if we end up with four power hitters in 2 years, I'm going to be like, should have traded for a guy who can hit 12 home runs. Great stuff with the Mockbusters there with Jake Murren. In case we missed it, coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.